Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 18, the preacher says, "Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun, during the few years of life which God has given him, for this is his reward." Again, the premise that we are studying off of this weekend, especially today in these studies, is there are questions that we have in life about purpose, meaning, about direction. We also ask, well, what in this life ought I to value? What ought I to see as being very valuable, as something that I hold on to very strongly? We also might ask, well, what can bring me true satisfaction? What can give me a sense of satisfaction that I feel truly fulfilled? And thus far, what we've seen in life is that there are different things that we can fill voids with in this life. There's different things that we've looked at already. But I want us to consider for just a moment that life under the sun is not simply about some of these things. Life under the sun is not simply about gaining wisdom and knowledge. Would you agree with that with me? We see that in the first chapter, didn't we? We saw that last night in our study from chapter 1, where the preacher begins and he sets kind of a dreary picture for life, for this life under the sun. He says, listen, in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 16, that I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge, and I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I realize that this too is striving after the wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. If we want to find value and satisfaction in wisdom and knowledge, and he says, well, you're going to be left lacking still. There's still going to be something left that you're wanting, that you're going to want more. Let me suggest to you as well that life is not all about having fun. Life's not about having fun. We looked at the first few verses of chapter 2 to understand this, where the preacher there says, I said to myself, come now, and I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. Behold, too, it was futility. And I said of laughter, it is madness and pleasure. What does it accomplish? I expanded my mind to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely in how to take hold of folly until I could see what was good there is for the sons of men to do under the sun the few years they have to live. So it's not all about having fun, because fun is temporary. Fun can change very quickly. It's also not about accumulating possessions. It's not about accumulating stuff for ourselves. We saw that in the next few verses in chapter 2, where the preacher talks about all the things that he had done for himself. That he had built the homes, he had planted the vineyards, he had planted the gardens, he had the ponds of water, the female slaves, the male slaves, the concubines. He had all these things. And still he was left wanting more. And then finally, life is not also all about gaining physical gratification. And all these things again, all these concubines, the physical gratification still was not enough. But I wonder, you have that little bubble there in your book. These things, the wisdom and knowledge, the fun, the possessions, the gratification, there is a sense of value in these things. And we value these things, do we not? We value wisdom. We value knowledge. We value doing fun stuff. We value possessions. We value our physical gratification. We value those things. And we can also find satisfaction in these things. But my question is this: what type of value and satisfaction do they bring? What do you think? What type of value and satisfaction do they bring? Temporary. I think that's a good way to put it. They bring a temporary value. They have temporary value. They bring temporary satisfaction. I might describe it as they bring a very shallow sense of value and satisfaction to our lives. Very shallow. Because something that is shallow, obviously, is not deep. But it often is not lasting as well. We think about that often in regards to our looks, right? That beauty is passing. It's passing away. Well, why? Because we don't stay young and beautiful forever. at least not in a young sense. The clear skin, the smooth skin, eventually will start to wrinkle, and we won't look like we used to. It's passing away. It is temporary. But we're looking for things where we can find a true, deep, lasting sense of value. A true, deep, lasting sense of satisfaction. And so we're going to look then in this section at where true value is found. And then we also want to look at three truths about finding satisfaction. This is where we're going. Let's figure out what we're going to find. Let's begin here. Let's begin here looking in chapter 5 is where we're going to be mostly in this lesson. Chapter 5 and chapter 6. Both decently long chapters, so we're not going to get to read through them in their totality. But we're going to hit highlights of some of the portions I think that'll be good for us to consider. Here in chapter 5, let me suggest to you first and foremost from verses 1 through 7 that we can find value in what we say. We can find value in what we say because our words, they hold much value. Our words mean something. Beginning in chapter 5 and verse 1, Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 1, the preacher says, "Guard your steps as you go to the house of the God, and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God, for God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For the dream comes through much effort, and the voice of the fool through many words. When you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for He takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. For do not let your speech cause you to sin, and do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry on account of your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For in many dreams and in many words there is emptiness. Rather, fear God." Who can describe to me what a word is? What is a word? A word. Okay, it is an expression of thought. I've heard it framed very, very similarly to that. That words are vehicles of thought. So, I have something in my mind. I want it to be in Tim's mind. How can my thoughts get into Tim's thoughts? Words. Communication. Communication are vehicles of thought. I speak to him, and as the words leave my lips, they're like little cars that zoom right to Tim's ears, and he hears them and he understands. My thoughts are now his thoughts. Vehicles of thought. And so what we need to recognize then is that the words that we use, the words that we say, the words that we put out there for the universe, they mean something. They have a value. We need to make sure that they are of the highest value. We need to speak expensively. Speak expensively. What I mean by that is that we need to put a high value in what we say. Because what we say often, kind of like our actions, they show who we are as people. The words that I speak, they come from who I am as a person. Because what is the source of our words? What's the source of anything that we do? It's our heart, right? It's our hearts. Our hearts are the sources of everything. From everything, the heart flows. That's why in Proverbs chapter 4, it talks about guarding your heart, for from it flow the springs of life. Everything comes from our hearts. So if I want somebody to understand that my heart has been given to God, then I need to speak like a person whose heart has been given to God. That means we need to value our words. That means every single word that we say needs to be weighed. And so in order to weigh my words, I need to what? Scratch my head, Tim. Think about it, right? What do our parents always tell us to say? Think before you speak. Think before you speak. Wiser words I needed so often in my youth. And even now, as I recognize that as a professional orator, as someone who speaks for a living, that's what I'm judged by. I'm judged by my words. And as we see in Ecclesiastes and as we see in other places, the more you talk, what's there more of a chance of? Trouble, right? The more you talk, the more trouble you have the opportunity to get yourself into. So those who are in positions where they speak often, preacher, teacher, first grade, right? First grade teacher, whatever else many of you do or are looking to do in your life, if it's a position where you're going to speak often, train your heart first. Train your heart to value your words. Think before you speak, because you're going to be judged by your words. Therefore, you need to put a lot of value in them. Let me suggest to you this as well about what we ought to value. We need to value respect for authority. We need to value respect for authority. Beginning in verses 8 and 9, we see a situation here. And he says that if you see oppression, Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 8, if you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight, for one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. Really, verse 8 is talking about is corruption with authority. There are people who abuse authority. I know this is going to come as a shock to you guys, but people in authority, particularly the government, sometimes abuse their authority. I know it's a shock. I hope your world's not crushed. It's the truth. Whenever you are in a position of authority, Satan hounds you. You will be hounded by Satan to take advantage of that authority and to use it to your own personal gain. And there is not a better example of where that happens than in government, especially on the highest levels, federal government. It just is what it is. It is corruption. It is greed. It is misuse of power time and time and time again. That's reality. It stinks. We wish it wasn't so, but it is what it is. However, did you see verse 9? After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. Verse 8, he notes that there's issues with people who are in authority, that sometimes they abuse it and they cover up for one another. But his ending point is, it's still better than the alternative. As corrupt as our government is at times, let me suggest it's still better than the anarchy, where people are just running in the streets, not worried about anybody telling them to stop. Literal free-for-all. We're talking Hunger Games mixed with The Purge, mixed with every other terrible movie you could think of, where people are killing each other and taking advantage of each other. Just bad stuff. That's what the world would be without authority. And here's the thing. Authority's always been around. You might say, well, Nick, government hasn't always been around. That's true, but there's always been authority in the world. Even in the garden, there was authority. It was God. God was the authority. And of course, he continues to be the authority today. But even past that, once Adam and Eve and their families come on the picture, there was still authority. It was the fathers, the patriarchs. They were the authority. And then once people started banding together and living in communities, they still had authority. They still had the town council, whatever it is. There was still authority. God recognizes that what's best for us is for there to be someone who serves as an authority. We even have that within the church, do we not? With shepherds. That shepherds lead churches. It is good for us to be a people who respect authority. For we are all always under authority, are we not? All of us. Whenever we're children, who's our authority? Most direct authority is parents. Whenever we get in school, who's our authority? Teachers. Whenever we get on the job, who's our authority? Our bosses. Even whenever we become the boss of the company, who's our authority? They still probably have a boss at some point, right? And if it's not, the boss, it's the government. There is always someone who rules in authority over us. And it is good for us to find value in respecting those who rule over us. Here's the thing. Think about this, especially in regards to, like, shepherds, for example. Hebrews chapter 13, whenever the Hebrew writer is finishing up that letter, and he says to respect the elders who rule over you. What's his reasoning for the need to respect them? Do you guys remember by any chance? They keep watch over your souls. And he's saying, you need to respect them. You need to honor them. Because what you're doing is you're making their job easier. And in making their job easier, it's better for you. Right? It's better for you. if rulers have the opportunity to rule simply and easily, things go better, right? But whenever we frustrate our parents, whenever we nag them and ask them silly questions and waste their time and don't obey and don't do this and don't do that, most of our parents get frustrated, right? Those who still live at home, you might have a mom or dad who does get frustrated whenever you don't do what they say. Chloe, I know your parents do. I've seen the wrath of Jeanette. It's terrifying. Everybody does. Everybody's parents get upset. And if they're upset, that means we normally get upset. And if they're upset and we're upset, what's that interaction like? It's not good, is it? No. When are we at peace with our parents the most? When we just do what they say. We just do what they say. Now, I will say that as a parent and as someone who is in a position of authority, that one of the ways, and this is for you guys for later on, one of the ways for you guys to help people respect you, whatever position of authority you might be in, whether it be as a husband or as a wife with her children or as a boss, whatever it is, one of the ways that you can help people to respect you, because this is a two-way street. In order to get respect, you got to give respect. And you hope to give respect to get respect, right? We hope that. One of the ways that we can help is to not just say what to do, but say why to do it. This is kind of an aside. In our interactions with those who we are over, we know that we must tell them what to do sometimes. I know as Olivia gets older, I'm going to tell her, you have to do this. You have to clean the room. You have to clean your room. Or you have to flush the toilet. Or you have to put up your clothes. You have to wash your clothes. What's she going to say a lot of times? What's the response right then? Why? It's probably the word we've used most in our lives. Anybody here never ask why? Don't even raise your hand. We all ask why. Especially as kids, we ask why. Why do we do this? Why do we do that? Why do we come to church every single Sunday morning? Can I tell you, that's okay. That's okay to ask that. It's okay to ask why. Because it's good for us to know why, isn't it? I think one of the problems we find ourselves in as teachers or just as people in authority is that so often we just tell people what, we don't tell them why. Because people are much more willing to respond positively to what we say whenever we give them good reasoning for why we're doing it. My mom has this shirt. She might still wear it, Mia. Tell me if she does. She probably does. It was the shirt that had like this mama bear and this baby bear. And the little caption was like, why, Mom? And the mom just said, because I'm the mom, that's why. Because I said so. Does she still wear that? She does? Probably does. Here's the thing. As parents, you have that right. As a parent to your child, you have that right. But that doesn't help your child obey. Sometimes it's necessary. Why do the forks go here and the spoons go there? It might just because I like my spoons on the left of my spoons on the right, my forks on the left. I might just like that. Deal with it, kid. But whenever we're asked questions of substance, why do we come to church on Sunday? That is an opportunity to teach. You don't just say because God said so. That's the easy answer. That's the easy answer. And sometimes we might be tempted to give the easy answer. We need to give a good answer, though. Because this is the Lord's Day. This is the Lord's Day. This is when Jesus rose. These are the examples we have. And so on and so forth down the line. We can help to gain respect by helping to teach. That's an aside. That is wasted 5 minutes. Not wasted 5 minutes. I just used 5 minutes to talk about. Because that's important. I think in the church we have failed at times because we have stressed too much the how and not stressed the why. I think we've done that. I've experienced that in my life. Talk too much about how and what. We won't talk enough about the why. Talk about the why. Whatever position you have authority over someone, or whether you should have the opportunity to teach someone, stress the why. Because knowing the why almost always helps the person to accomplish the what or the how. Almost always. So keep that in mind. We need to value then our respect for authority. We need to value that. But then finally, we need to value our attitude towards wealth. Really important here. Again, this is another reason why I think Solomon is a perfectly logical choice as the author for this book. He was wealthy. He had money. Lots of it. Not just lots of money, but just lots of stuff. And so he's teaching and helping us to understand, listen, I've done the money stuff the wrong way. I want to teach you the right way. I want to teach you the value that you need to have for riches. We'll read through this real fast, beginning verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 10. Nor he who loves abundance with its income, this too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. There is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by the owner to his hurt. When those riches were lost through a bad investment and he fathered the son, there was nothing to support him. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor, and he can carry nothing in his hand. This also is a grievous task, exactly as a man is born. Thus he will die, so what advantage to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life he also eats in darkness with great vexation and anger. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting to eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life in which God has given him, for this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he will also empower him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. The way we view stuff matters. And we need to put a high value on how we see stuff. Because stuff is just a means to an end, right? We know we have to have stuff in order to do other things. We have to have money in order to buy food. We have to have food in order for this body to function. We even have this body in order to get from birth to eternity, right? Everything that we possess, every tangible thing, is a means to an end. But notice what he says is that we need to recognize that if we have all these things in abundance and we don't appreciate them, it's futility. If we have been blessed by God to have abundance in these things, we need to appreciate them. We need to be satisfied with them. And then we need to use them well. We need to use these things well. And he talks about in verse 12, the man who works, he's able to sleep good, right? Because he can take some, we'll talk about satisfaction in a second, but he can take some satisfaction in his work. But the rich man, the rich lazy man who does nothing, goes to bed with a full stomach. He said he doesn't sleep because he hasn't done nothing. He has not done anything to deserve his rest. He talks about verse 14, that we need to make sure that we take care of those who are in our care. The guy who had a son and he wasn't able to support him. We need to make sure that we're careful with our money. That way we can support those who need supporting. If I'm a husband, it's my responsibility to take care of my wife. If I have kids, my responsibility to take care of my kids. Through whatever means that is, righteously of course, I need to make sure that I'm leading my house, providing for those who need providing for. There needs to be value in these things. In just a second, Curtis, let me tell you as well, there's value in how we obtain money, which means we don't rob, steal, cheat to get our money right. Not good, in case you were unclear about that. It's not good as Christians for us to steal. It's not good for us to cheat others. It's not good to be a scoundrel. Not very fond of scoundrels. Bernie Madoff probably wouldn't be good to follow his lead. Who knows who Bernie Madoff is, first of all? Okay, and nobody over here besides Emily. Emily must be the oldest person over here by far. Yeah, you guys know who Bernie Madoff is? Okay, so really interesting. He was an embezzler, right? I guess that'd be the right word. Embezzled tons of people's monies, millions of dollars. Not good. That's frowned upon. Makes people upset. Whenever people give you their money and expect you to invest it and keep it safe and grow it and then give it back, and you don't do that, for whatever reason, they get upset about that. I don't know why. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that's not good. So we need to obtain our money well. We need to use our money well. Let me give you a take-home point, and then Curtis is going to have a comment. Let me tell you this. We can find value in what God has given us. That's where we need to find value. We need to find value in what God has given us. But in order to find value in it, we actually need to enjoy what God has given us, right? We need to enjoy what God has given us. And what do you think else we need to be? We need to be thankful, right? We need to be thankful. I think I just cannot wait for the years whenever Olivia and other kids we might have, where Katie and I buy them presents for Christmas, and we spend all this money on them for presents, and they open it up and they go, toss it aside and go play with a box. Do they find value in those presents if they toss it to the side and go play with a box? No, they don't even enjoy them. That would be so frustrating. We can show God our appreciation by enjoying what He has given us. Using it well. I love these verses that we have in Ecclesiastes, especially verse 19. Furthermore, as for every 18, 19, but 19, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, He has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and to rejoice in his labor. This is a gift of God. Guys, God has blessed us so abundantly, especially in this country. We know wealth unlike anybody else knows. For us to be unappreciative and to not enjoy them, shame on us. Shame on us. Because there are many brethren, our brethren in Africa, who are in so great a need. Enjoy the things God has given you. Be thankful for them. That's where we ought to find value. Go ahead, Curtis.
I'd like to share an experience.
Please.
That I've had as a story very briefly that really brought this concept home to me. I think you were hesitant. And you just set it up perfectly, so thanks for doing that.
The alley.
But, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, most important guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm privileged to substitute teach in junior high and high school quite a bit. And one day there's a kid. So I was in a class I hadn't been in before, and a couple of the LS kids came in or whatever, and they're just kind of doing some of their own things. Well, one of the kids is in a wheelchair, and he was just minding his own business and working on his robot or whatever they're doing, and a couple of kids come over and start picking on him and just harassing him for no reason. And so it kind of dispersed and shoot him off in a little bit. And I sat down with him, and because he started tearing up, and so I said, you know, are you doing okay? What's going on? Do you want to talk about this? And he said something that I hope I never forget. He said, you know, they don't realize that I used to be able to walk. Mm-hmm. And I would do anything to go walk before he did. And that hit me like a bag of bricks that this kid didn't even care about the abuse he just went through. What he cared about was that he had something that he lost. And he was never going to get back in his life. And what I realized from that is how many days of my life, how many minutes, how many seconds have I taken for granted the fact that I just get up out of bed in the morning and walk to the bathroom? That I just go outside and build a frisbee around? That I just walk in and sit down and wait for church? And still have to do that. And understanding that it can always be better, sure, but it can definitely always be worse. And being appreciative, truly not taking for granted what we have right now, especially with good health, with love in our life, and the ability to do things we enjoy, even just walking.
Anybody thinking about walking this morning? You might have to get up out of bed and say, left, right, left, right, left, right. No.
That contentment.
Yeah.
That's the secret to finding satisfaction. Mm-hmm. It's like, my life changed that night. When I was on my knees, on my bed, tearing up and praying, that I not take for granted anymore anything I've been blessed with. The good and the bad. Things I've learned from, things that I've been able to enjoy.
We look for things that we can value. We look for things that bring us satisfaction. And if we're not finding those things in our lives, I am pretty confident in saying it's not because they're not there. It's not because they're not there. It's because we're not willing to recognize them because we want something more, right? While we are blessed in this country, let me suggest that our blessings have caused us to be very greedy at times. And to set expectations and bars for ourselves that might not be unrealistic, but they're unnecessary. Oh, Nick, I'm just a working middle class kind of guy. I want something more than that. Why? Why can't you just be satisfied in the fact that you are where you are? It could get better, yeah. You could move up, but you can also move down pretty far too. But Nick, I'm in the lowest poverty level. Okay, that's fine. It could still be worse. Think about all you have. Even those in this country who are very much not well off still have more than so many others do. It's about recognizing what's important, right? Recognizing what's important. And being thankful. Think being thankless is what leads to never finding value or satisfaction. And nothing's ever good enough. We need to be a people who are humble and recognize there's plenty in this life that is good enough for us. It just requires us to recognize them and to attribute to them what they actually are, that they're blessings from God. Go ahead. Yeah, I love that. Yes. A chore, yeah. Yes. Yes. It is. A people who are unwilling to be thankful are people that cannot please God. Because again, I think our inability to be thankful often is the result of pride. Because we often are not thankful for those things that we feel like we deserve, right? Anybody thankful for the air that they're breathing right now? Well, no, we probably haven't thought about that because we just feel like it's just a part of life, right? I deserve it. Since I'm living, I deserve some good air. Well, that's just not true. We don't deserve it. It's given to us freely by God as a blessing. Everything we have is not deserved, but it is a blessing. I do love the idea about minding, being appreciative for the little things. One of the ladies at church, she teaches kindergarten. And as a reward to her students, she doesn't have to give them anything crazy. Nothing extravagant. Whenever her students do something extra special, she gives them one M&M. One. And you would think that she had just given them the moon. That one M&M makes their day. I could give them a bajillion M&Ms for my dad. They'd go crazy. Be appreciative for little things. Find value in the little things. I see a couple hands. Then we're going to run through these last three things and we'll be done. Go at ladies first. Sorry, Justin. Finding satisfaction is difficult sometimes. Because like she said, it's always that next thing we want. You know, I'm the quadriplegic. Well, I wish I had my arms. Then I wish I had my torso. I wish I had my legs. I wish I could run faster. I wish I could jump higher. I wish I could dunk. I wish I was the best dunker. I wish I was the best basketball player. I wish I was the best athlete ever. I wish I was the best human being ever. Where does it end? It doesn't often, because there's a lack of satisfaction that we're willing to accept. And if we live our lives without ever accepting some satisfaction, ever finding satisfaction in things, what kind of life is that? Is that not a miserable life? It's miserable to always be thinking, I want something more. You don't find happiness in that place. You need to be satisfied. Go ahead, Justin.
Someone probably heard the name of Nick Vujicic, who wrote a book called Life Without Limits. Mm-hmm. You might have thought the title Life Without Limits because it was actually born
out. Oh, yeah, he's that little dude, right? With the torso. Yeah. His little foot. Little foot? Yeah.
He's got one foot.
He swims. It's crazy.
About his journey.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, you know, even here with the younger man that Curtis referred to there in the wheelchair, you know, you can sense the frustrations there. But at the same time, you know, this is where I think God tests us, where we're challenged to look at what we do have. You know, one could end up being a little like Helen Keller.
Literally nothing.
Literally nothing, right. You know, but you do have something. So what are you using? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Become senile and decrepit and all, you know, down about everything. Remember that, you know, Christ came that we might have life, have more abundance.
Absolutely.
And be a joyful person.
Yeah. Find what it is we can find satisfaction in, and then use that well. Let me just give you these guys with the briefest of comments, so we go eat lunch, when people aren't yelling at me. Notice these three truths about finding satisfaction. Number one, it's better to never have than to have and not be satisfied. We've kind of discussed that already. We need to be satisfied, because God says, you're not going to be satisfied, I'd rather just take it from you. But then, that lack of satisfaction, what it puts us is in this endless cycle of wanting more, gaining more, wanting more, gaining more, wanting more, gaining more. Where does it end? It doesn't. And if we live without satisfaction, then we are just in a miserable, miserable state. And then some things we need to recognize can't be changed. It is the truth that there might be some things that we can just never be satisfied with. That will never bring us the satisfaction that we want. So maybe what that means then is that we need to bring our expectation level down a little bit, right? We need to move our expectations down to recognize this is just reality. This is reality. This is what I find myself in. I recognize there's nothing I can do about it. So I need to make the best of my situation. Think about what Jesus says in Matthew 6, right? About worry and anxiety. What worry can add a foot to your height? It can't. Worrying does nothing. Acting does. But sometimes even our action can't do anything for us. So we just need to be satisfied at times with our reality. So this is a take-home point for you guys to consider. That we can find true satisfaction in the Lord and His will for us. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters, right? At the end of the day, whenever we're trying to find value, I value what God values, right? I value what God values. If God values this, then I need to value that as well. And I need to be satisfied with the Lord's will for me. It might not be that in this life I'm going to be the best athlete in the world. I need to be satisfied with that. Because I might not be the best athlete, but I can be the best servant for God. Everybody can do that. Doesn't matter how tall you are, how fit you are, we all can be good servants. And that is the will of God, that we serve one another well. So that's what we ought to be striving for. To be servants, to find value in service, to find satisfaction in the good of others and in helping them. That's where value and satisfaction comes from. Not stuff of this life, because we talk about this. This life is for the next. So find value and satisfaction in your preparation and in your love and in your service for others. Let's have a prayer, and then we'll dismiss to go get some lunch, okay? Our Father, we are so thankful again for this day that you've blessed us with. Lord, it has been a good day. And we're thankful to you for it. We praise you. We honor you. We magnify and exalt your worthy name. Thank you, Father, so much. Thank you for these times of study. Thank you for these young people and for their hearts. Thank you for their good attention. Very thankful for that and for the good discussion and for the growth that I hope has been seen in everything that we've done. Pray, God, that you'll bless us as we go from here to reconvene and get some food and to share in the fruits of fellowship. We pray that you'll bless us and be with us as we come back here this afternoon for another period of study. Keep us, Lord, for your glory. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.